Welcome along to the Retro Asylum.
Start there.
Yeah, I'll just start whenever I'm ready, Chris, and I am ready. We are already going. So
it's been a while.
It's been a while, but still, you're still up to your old tricks.
Yeah, I am.
All good then. No, it's been a while, and we've actually skipped an episode. I'm sorry to say, but life has been busy for you and I both. So, for our fighting game fans, we're sorry that there were no fighting game club episode. We did play a bit of a really nice fighting game, didn't we, Chris?
I
had good fun with it in multiplayer.
It just really doesn't do anything for me. You know, I feel like I tried.
Yeah. So I tried to, I forget what she was called, the character that I played, the one with the eagle.
Oh, I forget now as well.
Tried to learn her moveset. And I feel like for my level of mastering a fighting game, I kind of mastered her. I would never get through the single player campaign, but again, I didn't really want to play it single player, but the few times that we played it online was good fun. And it's a point for me, Chris, because I beat you.
You did. I was terrible at it.
And that's good because I've lost every single battle we've had in gaming the last year or two. So that's good.
I was so bad at that game. Me, you, Jim Middleton, Wise Mids, and one of our other listeners joined us, didn't...
Oh, yeah, yeah. And he beat me. He beat the shit out of me.
Yeah, he was really good, actually.
Yeah.
But, you know, Fightcade, at least the one positive thing that came out of June when we played Samurai Showdown was Fightcade is really good.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And it works definitely. A treat.
Yes, yes. And I didn't even notice any lag or anything like that. I'm sure there was, but for my skill level, I didn't notice anything. It felt really smooth and nice.
It was a bit fiddly to set up, wasn't it? I joined just after you guys had finished.
I think, but the problem we had, Jim and I, setting it up was because we were doing it wrong. We were holding
it
wrong.
You had the wrong ROM, didn't you?
Yes, we were just doing it wrong. So it is actually quite easy to do.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think we were playing, Jim was on one ROM and I was on another, really. So
it's not just fighting games on there. I mean, there's Metal Slug and there's loads of games on there.
Seems like a great way of playing those old arcade games in a multiplayer setting. So we need to get on that, actually.
Yeah, but I think, do you know what? I think we can honestly say now that fighting games just aren't for us.
No, that's true. That's true.
We have tried.
I had fun playing you. I didn't have fun playing the AI, probably because I was so bad at it. But
I did not have fun playing you because I got absolutely hammered. But I did have fun. I did have fun playing it. Although I did try and play it on the cab on default difficulty. And oh my
yes.
God, I couldn't even win a round.
Yeah, it's tough. It's tough indeed.
At least on the AES version, the normal difficulty is... Well, you can set it to easy difficulty, but even normal difficulty is like one, difficulty level one on the MVS version.
Okay, I played the MVS at the standard settings on the Mister, and that was very, very hard.
Very difficult.
Yes.
Just don't do it.
Nope.
So how have you been, mate?
I've been fine, mate. I've been fine. How about you?
Yeah, I've been good. I've been ticking over, really, playing the game club games and cracking on with the playthrough games and the community. But I mean, those three, the game club, the community playthrough, and playthrough have me pretty much completely maxed out gaming wise these days.
It should, because that's a lot of gaming.
It's like three games on the go at once. Although the nice thing is when you get towards the end of the month and you finish playing those games, you have a little bit of what I think of free time before they start again at the start of a month.
So where are you up to in the community playthrough then?
So we just finished Metroid 2.
Okay.
On the game where you played that?
No, never.
Wow, that's a good game, that. Yeah, I was really worried about Metroid 2 because I didn't really enjoy the original Metroid. I found it quite difficult to go back to that. And I'd never played it before, not for any length of time. But as it went on, I found it really obtuse and just really difficult to stick with. And thinking, does that on the Game Boy really didn't fill me with excitement, but you know, you go in there with an open mind, don't you?
Mm.
And actually, it's much better than the original Metroid, and it's actually better for being a little bit smaller in scope.
Okay,
I found it just a lot easier to navigate my way around, and because it's in chunks where you have the way the game is, it's kind of set up into parts, areas of the map that you can't move out of until you've killed so many Metroids, and you have a Metroid counter that. Overall Metroid counter that ticks down when you kill a Metroid, it kind of ticks. I think it starts at 49 and it ticks down. But within each area, you have so many Metroids. And when that's another counter that ticks down. And you know me and numbers, seeing those numbers falling, wonderful thing.
Yes.
And when you've killed all the Metroids in an area, you get like a little rumble and you hear a rumble. And somewhere a level of lava has lowered. So you can access then the next section.
Okay.
And it just keeps the exploration quite manageable because you know the Metroids that you need to find are all within a certain area.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it makes, for me anyway, it makes a huge difference to the gameplay.
Mm. Yeah, sounds good. So I've never actually really played a Metroid game apart from the most recent one, Metroid Dread.
Okay.
I think I've never actually picked up any of the Metroid games.
Well, you've played Metroid Prime, mate.
True, but the Prime games are a different beast, really.
Yeah, they are. Yeah, they are pretty much. Yeah. So you've never played the Sacred Cow Super Metroid?
No, never.
Nah, you'll have to join in when we get to that, then.
Yeah. See, I don't have time to have three games on the go. I struggle just following along with the stuff I need to play for playthrough, and the game club as well. So
you played lots of Devil May Cry, though.
There's no way I'll add a third one. Yes, I've actually, because I've been on holiday last week, I spent a lot of hours with Devil May Cry, and those are hours I'll never get back. So
it's great for you to say that.
We'll have words about that later on, Chris, but this is not the episode for that.
You can't blame me if you're rubbish.
True. I can't blame you. And I am rubbish. Man, I'm a shit gamer. That's the truth of it. Because Chris told me this is a 5 to 7 hour game. You're gonna finish it in 6 hours, mate.
It's
so short. And yes, I think actually, if you do look at my save game, it says something along the lines of 7 hours, 6 hours and 50 minutes. But that's not counting the 753 times I died and had to play the same 5 minutes again and again. So I'm somewhere along the 15 to 20 hour line right now, and I'm still not through. So calling this a 6 hour game is pretty much like saying that, hey, you know that Ghosts and Goblins? That's a 12 minute game. And I'm sure it is. I'm sure you can play through Ghosts and Goblins in 12 minutes, but not at the first go, mate.
How long to beat says? 5 to 6 hours.
And what have we learned about how long to beat, mate? It's a willy-waving contest. That's what it is.
Take it with a big fat pinch of salt.
Yes.
No, it is blooming difficult. I mean, it's a lot more difficult than I remember it for sure.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. And maybe not. Yeah, maybe there was a big, big fat dose of rose tinted spectacles. I'll say as much as that before we record an episode on it.
Yes. But I'm actually looking forward to record the episode. It's not all bad, but we'll get into that in the episode.
But just to finish off on that community playthrough point, though, it's getting good, you know, because we're going to finish off this little round of games. We've got Metal Gear 2 to play, which would be good. And then we've got Final Fantasy 3, which I'll enjoy. Final Fantasy 2, which I'll enjoy, but maybe no one else will. And then we've got Castlevania 2, which is one I think we probably just need to get through. But then in the next little round, we're back to Zelda. We got Link to the Past. We got Super Metroid, Metal Gear Solid, man, and then Final Fantasy 3. But then, which again, I'll really enjoy, but I'll probably be the only one. And Castlevania 3 on the NES, which apparently is the best of the NES Castlevanias and probably maybe the best 8-bit Castlevania.
Yeah, I've heard
that.
Yeah.
That is going to be what a round. I think by the time we get to Link to the Past, it'll be December.
Okay.
So it's July now. So if anyone's thinking of joining in, December might be a good time to start. We'll have played through all the difficult games to get through in the series. We'll be only the good ones from here on.
Mm. Yeah, it's good. Sounds good. I love Link to the Past.
Joe, I've never actually played it for more than 45 minutes or so.
Okay. Oh, you should. That's just, actually, I think that was the first Zelda game I finished. Yeah, it was.
Yeah.
A great game.
Yeah. I'm very much looking forward to it.
Mm.
Mate, we need to get into the first real part of this episode.
Yes, yes. We've actually got two parts. This is not just a whittling down of candidates for the 2 months of RPG, the summer RPG month in the Game Club. We also have what we like to think is a very interesting interview with some guys from Sega Powered, right?
Yep.
Yep. But before we get to that, let's just thank all of our beautiful Patreon sponsors. Are you ready?
Yeah, and let me just bring up the list. Good old Dean Swain's list. Ah, oh, this is a long list.
It is a long list.
Right, so listeners, if you don't want to listen to us read our patrons, feel free to fast forward about 45 minutes. Stop with that one. Yeah, go on, mate, you kick off.
So we've got Pete Rogers to thank.
Rune P.
New Game Old Flame, the podcast.
Christopher Bolton.
Damon Crockett.
Dylan Darch.
Bitmapsoft.
Alec Plint.
Mike's Retro Tech.
Derek Young.
Dave Velociraptor.
Nick.
Howard Price.
Matthew Turner.
S-E-I-C. No, S-E-E-C. S-I-E-C. I can't say that. S-I-E-C.
Easy for you to say.
Yes.
Adam Hind.
Chris O'Regan.
James Dunn.
Hans Krumbin.
Roushi MSX.
Guto Threadbear.
Chris Atwill.
X-Man.
Harvey Watson.
Martin Jones.
Ninjixel.
Tim T.J. Walker.
Ricardo Enjo.
Adrian Nilsson.
Heavy Metal Dom.
James Bentley.
Tony Parkinson.
Gaz H.
Mal Woods.
Red Crested Regal.
Kane and Rince Podcast.
Lampton Worm.
Salvio Calabrese.
Mitsuyama.
Reese Wynn.
Clint Humphrey.
Mark Billund.
Paul Ashton.
Chris Rowe.
John Shepard.
Laurent Giroux.
Deadlock.
Aaron Morpin.
Jim Orbitz IT.
John Veal.
Thomas Scuffham.
Andy Marsh.
Patrick Fürst.
Laurence.
Andrew Gilmore.
Stephen Stuttard.
Matt Sullivan.
Darren Coles.
Gary Heather.
Edward Fitzpatrick.
Nick Lees.
And Blake Brett.
And I got through all of those with only a few errors, and I'm actually not wearing my glasses.
Very good, mate. Very good. It's early in the week as well. We've not had any alcoholic drinks, which is probably a good thing when you're reading a list that long.
No, but thank you, all of you, for helping us keeping the lights on here at RA Towers.
Yeah. Yo, and just speaking of one of our patrons, I actually went to see Chris O'Regan, it was a few weeks back now.
Mm.
And he was showing off his collection. Man, that man has, what a collection Chris has.
Yes.
And it is... I'm sure you won't mind me saying, you know, it's not a huge place, but it is almost wall to wall, just incredible tech.
Mm.
He has a pretty amazing, yeah, he's got this box full of, yeah, just speckies.
Mm.
You know, just every single model speccy you can think of. Same with the C64, same with the Atari 8-bit. He must have about 50 or 60 computers.
Yeah.
And it's pretty impressive. And he's got, like, you know, he's got all these EverDrives and flashcards for all of them.
Yes. Everything is working and ready to be plugged in.
Pretty much. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He used to, as you know, stream directly from a lot of those machines. I love watching that.
Yeah. He's got a very, very cool setup. So, yeah, shout out to Chris. Hello, Chris. And forward to catching up with him soon.
Yeah, yeah.
Should we get into this interview then?
Let's do that, mate. I'll let you lead into it because that was your interview.
So we get this weird podcasting paradox where Mads and I are about to introduce our former selves. Where we'll be talking to Dean of Sega Powered, Paul Monahan, formerly of this parish and guest host on the Dungeon Master podcast, who is a staff writer for Sega Powered, and Dan of Wave Game Studios, who I'm very sad to say, I didn't know really all that much, if anything, about before we came across him on this episode. But really nice guys, and we had a really good chat. Take a listen to it. Here it is. So I'm joined tonight, as well as Matt, who you've just heard from, by Dean from Sega Powered.
Hello.
Paul from Sega Powered.
Hello.
And Daniel from Wave Studios. Hello, gentlemen.
Also, hello.
Hello there. Right, so let's start for the uninitiated. Mads, I'm going to skip you here because our listeners know exactly who you are.
Yeah, no worries.
Let's have a quick whip around the table. And if you guys can just each introduce yourselves, just imagine that the people listening to this are from Mars and don't know who you are.
Cool.
Dean, let's start with you.
Cool. Okay. Well, I started in journalism just over 30 years ago. I worked for a couple of people, and then I worked at Future Publishing on a magazine called Sega Power. I stayed on that 6 years, rose to editor, then we relaunched it as Saturn Power. Then I left that to go freelance, worked on practically every gaming magazine that was at Future at that point. Then did other publishing things, and then early last year, a few of us got together and decided it would be really cool to do a new Sega magazine called Sega Powered. And there we go.
There we go. Nice. I like it. Paul, follow that.
Yeah, so basically, I started speaking to Dean towards the end of 2016, because he guested on Maximum Power Up to discuss Sega Power with a few other ex-staff from Sega Power. And then we met up in person in 2019, which I've mentioned a few times, heading down to Bath to catch up with the old Future Publishing lot, whoever I could find. Yeah. And then it was basically in a pub, like all good ideas blossom from. And, I think he just probably got sick of hearing me talking about old games magazines. He goes, do you know what? One day it'd be good to do this. And I went, yeah, it'd be great. And then, like I say, I've been obviously busy again, Maximum Power Up at that time and everything. Yeah. And then we've obviously seen that there'd been a bit of a boost into indie published magazines. Some better than others, some are, which are no longer here, and then we started getting our thinking caps on and reached out to another couple of guys who make up our team. Neil Randall, who also worked on Xbox Magazine, he worked on DC UK, he's done work for Edge, and then also Mark Jowett, who, like me, is a massive magazine fan. He runs Sega Mags, and honest to God, that guy knows his stuff. He really does. And like you, I've bought many a magazine off him. So, then it was a case of thinking of the idea of current and, the whole Sega scene, not just games, just you see how much is going on, fashion, Sonic films now and everything. And we just thought there was plenty to cover. So away we went. And that was in 2021.
Yeah. And away you have been, because it's flying, as we're going to talk about in a little while. And Daniel, last but not least.
Well, what haven't I done?
This is good.
I've done a lot of things over the years, but the two constants are the fact that I've always been into the gaming scene. I've really appreciated the artistry of it, and more so than the games themselves, almost, which is kind of weird to say, but
yeah, I understand.
It's the art and the music and the effect that it has on people. As a medium. And the other constant is the fact that I've always been involved in the marketing world. Okay. So I know how to sell. And we sort of thought a few years ago, wouldn't it be really cool if we could help some of these indies that we love and know and have known for years, a couple of decades in some cases, help them to get their games out there to a wider audience. And that's really the birth of Wave.
Okay. So Wave is a publisher. Strictly a publisher, or do you have any in-house developers?
We're strictly a publisher, but we do manufacturing, we do marketing, we do distribution, retail. We do the whole lot, basically, other than making the games ourselves.
Okay.
At this time.
Yeah. And that's just for new games on old platforms, right? No. There's no publishing on current gen systems?
No, just older systems. That's kind of our niche. And I think it's important to know where you can have the best effect and give people a great product.
Yeah. Yeah, the scene is absolutely thriving at the moment, isn't it?
It really is. It really is. Yeah. I couldn't be happier.
Yeah. Well, we'll come back to, we will circle back to this, and you'll have a chance to tell people where to find you and your games towards the end. So we will definitely come back to this. First, just wanted to, we're going to get, you guys are here primarily to talk about the latest issue of Sega Powered, issue 5, and the wonderful things that brings us, and we will get onto that. But Dean, I do have one question. You've been in the industry, you've been involved in the production of magazines pretty much your whole career. It's hard work, isn't it? What masochistic side of you decided you wanted to bring a brand new magazine on a 30 plus year old system?
It is hard work, but the thing is, as soon as I start, because I'd done various jobs before I worked at Future, but as soon as I started work on the mags, I thought this is what I want to do. All I wanted was to be an editor. Within months, I thought, I want to be an editor. I want my own mag. I want to be able to kind of control it, and I want, you know, to do, you know, be the, have the control over the mag. And I thought that just seemed like the ideal job for me. And when I reached that point, it was. So I can't imagine doing anything else. I've done my own small freebie mags over the last sort of 7 or 8 years, but they're smaller A5 things. And I just, all in my back of my mind, I thought, wouldn't it be brilliant to do a, you know, a proper A4 gaming magazine again? And the idea of launching a new Sega magazine sort of 20 odd years after closing an old one, it just seemed too delicious an idea not to do it, really.
Delicious an idea that is.
Yeah. You want to have a USP, you want to say to people, okay, well, this is why you should buy this magazine. And having the team that we did and saying, look, I did all this 20 odd years ago and I'm doing it again. So see what you think.
Yeah. And how difficult was it to pull in the team? Because I know the team is, it's reasonably svelte, isn't it, in terms of the guys that you have, the guys and gals who you have working with you. Was it, when you started to talk to people about what you wanted to do, were people sceptical? Did they need convincing, or were people kind of raring to go?
No, I mean, it was one of those very, very rare moments when you have exactly the right people at exactly the right time. Yeah. And I was pretty much sure if I said to Mark and Paul, you know, I'm launching a Sega mag, do you want to be involved? I can't imagine going, nah, do you know what? I can't be asked. You know, it was always, I think that was always kind of a good one. And I hadn't seen Neil for a while, but we got in contact for work reasons before this happened. So we were working together on something else. And then, so we were in contact and I said, look, I'm thinking of doing this. Are you up for it? And he was like, yeah, very much so. And it was good to have somebody alongside me who had the experience of working on the mags. You know, Paul and Mark are obviously great, but having somebody to just kind of, you know, somebody who's got that experience really helped. Yeah. So when I looked at the team, I thought, well, I've got Paul, Mark, Neil, and myself. You know, I couldn't ask for more, really. It was perfect.
I can see. And, you know, I can just see from the people whose names are next to the stories that, you know, it is a lot of work for all of you, isn't it, involved in this? You all have to really put in the hard yards to get each of these issues out.
It is hard work. And you know, there's things that have cropped up that we weren't necessarily expecting. Some things that we thought would go a lot smoother didn't. For example, the postage side of things, sending out to the EU is proving a lot harder than we initially hoped. But ultimately, it's kind of one of those jobs where you don't mind doing the old hours, and it's not a case of clock watching and thinking, oh my God, I've got. It's 11 o'clock and I've got another 5 hours of this. It's a case of, oh my God, it's 11 o'clock. How the hell am I going to cram everything in the next 5 hours? So it's kind of a joy to do, really. I don't really mind it. I don't know what the other guys think. But.
It's, sorry, just jumping straight in.
No, go for it.
No. Because it's quite funny because, like I said to Dean so many times, you know, obviously we're new to this, myself and Mark. And, you know, you put, let's just say it's a game of you put your ideas down on the page and everything like that, and he gets obviously fired over to Dean, and obviously he knows his stuff, and he'll come back and he'll go, right, you need to, well, I still roll my eyes at this, at myself, you know, with things like the first couple of reviews I did, where it's like, yeah, you've gone over by about 400 words because obviously the page layout is a lot different to, you know, like Amiga Addicts.
But we loved your Monkey Island Mega CD review, Paul.
No, I know. Well, that's good. But I tell you what, that's the first thing I reviewed, wasn't it, Dean? And
it
went back a couple of times going, no, you need to obviously think about what to put on a box out. And even this month, 5 issues in, he's still saying, if it's a box out for a 1-page review, try and keep it to this. If it's 2 pages, then you can afford to do, you know, your idea or whatever. Yeah. So it's like little things like that. Now, you know, there's other, like, you know, bits of grammar. Have you used a word too much and things like that? Yeah. And it's only, you know, like, I've hold my hands up and said to Dean, you know, like the other times I've gone, right, I'm going to send this over to you in the morning because I want that second look over it.
You want to step away from it for a
yeah, overnight. Yeah. Because I reviewed Postal, one of Daniel's games, bringing him into it for a minute. And I was working on that till I think about midnight one night. And then I was like, yep, all this is fine and everything. You know, I was like, save, I'll fire that over first thing. And then, like, when I got up in the morning, it's like, you know, clear head, you've rested up and you look back at it and you go, my God, no, that makes no sense at all. And, you know, then it could just be one line which is wrong. So obviously you've got to make sure that you're telling the right information as well. Yeah. You know, not just with Daniel's games, but with any games, because as we all know, if you make a mistake or say the wrong information in the retro gaming community,
they'll have you.
Let's just say, oh, they will have you.
Like,
actually, you find out that it only was, you know, cost this much on release, you know, or you find out you got 81% back in 1993 and not 80 that you put, you know, so you've got to make sure that everything is triple checked. How to, like, lose friends quickly. No,
yeah,
but it's obviously doing that. So it's a case of whatever we put into Dean, we've got to make sure that we're you know, 100% on,
happy with
you know, and we've had conversations over scoring. We've had conversations over content early on, you know, in the direction we want the magazine to go. And luckily, it's never come to fisticuffs. It's never come to crosswords.
Yet.
There's been disagreements. Touch wood, it never will. I think there's been disagreements, but we're always on the same page, you know. We put our arguments forward and go, you're right. You know, Dean and Neil are very, very experienced, you know. But then again, on the flip side, myself and Mark, as readers of God knows how many magazines, have got that side of experience.
Yeah.
Sorry, Dean.
No, absolutely. That makes sense. I mean, I was just quickly going to say that, you know, I've said this to in other interviews, but I mean, if it was just my magazine, it wouldn't be anywhere near as good as it is because, you know, you rely on the input of others and the fact that, you know, every one of the other guys has put input and said, look, I think, why don't we try this? Why don't we try that? They've all been great ideas. We've talked about it and all the decisions, all the features, all the reviews, you know, they're all kind of, we all kind of go through them as a group because it's important that, you know, it is our magazine. It's not just mine. It's not Neil's. It's all of us. So we all want to feel like, you know, we have a say in it and a way in that it's put together.
Yeah. I think because the team is small as well, it certainly has a nice, consistent feel to it, you know, throughout the magazine. The tone, in terms of the tone, you know, I think you can see the difference in styles in some of the writing, but certainly the tone carries through. And you can tell that you kind of all, it's obvious that you all get together and, you know, work on it together. It feels collegiate when you read it.
Oh, yeah, thank you. Yeah, I mean, we've got a group chat that, and it's there's never a day that goes by where, like, even if it's just like, I'm a bit bored today, or isn't there other shit, or anything, you know, we kind of always make sure that, you know, we catch up with each other and just check in.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah.
Okay. And Daniel, you obviously, or your company, your studio, Wave features a lot in issue 5, and we will come on to that. And I'm sure everyone knows the key thing about issue 5, but I'm trying to build to it for those who don't. But Daniel, how did you get involved with the Sega Power team? Did you approach them? Did they approach you? How did that come about?
It's a pretty interesting story, actually, depending on your definition of interesting, I suppose. But basically, I was watching a live stream of Intrepid Izzy, which was our first ever release. And Dean just happened to be also in the live stream watching, One of about six people who were watching, so the chances are sort of astronomically low that we came together at that exact moment. we're chatting amongst ourselves in the chat on the stream, we added each other on social media, and we've basically just been sort of chatting since then. And I think that was roughly about a year ago, wasn't it, Dean?
It was on the launch of Izzy, so it'd been August, yeah. And it was because it popped up on Twitter, and I thought, oh, okay, well, nobody knew about the magazine then. I mean, it was already well in development. I mean, we'd been doing it for probably 3 or 4 months by then, but nobody else knew outside of the team. So I thought, well, this is a Dreamcast game. I imagine we're going to be covering it. Yeah. I want to go and pop along and see what the fuss is about. So
it's one of those kind of real moments of just at the right place at the right time for both of you, isn't it?
Definitely.
Serendipity was the word.
Yes. The thing is, though, because like obviously you've got so many people working on Dreamcast games now and Mega Drive games and things like that, it's going to give us that constant stream of things to cover as well.
Yeah.
You know, and that's just, for sure. It's just crazy, to be in 2022.
And did you guys have that conversation straight away? So, we've got Sega games in our books and you guys are going to do a Sega magazine. Let's work together. Or was it more of just was that an organic thing that came up?
I think it pretty much did come up straight away, just purely because it's an obvious symbiotic relationship there, you know? I mean, apart from the fact that, the guys cover our content, I really like magazines.
Yeah.
So it's been nice to have each issue and read it and, you know, have something new to, indulge my sensibilities and interests, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So let's talk issue 5 then, which is the brand new issue. Dean, tell us what's unique about issue 5?
Actually, let me just stop you there, Chris. Before we dive into issue 5, for those of our listeners who haven't actually picked up an issue of Sega Powered yet, could you just, Dean, perhaps you spent 2 minutes telling us what could you expect in an issue of Sega Powered? What are you covering and so on?
Yeah, sure. No worries. So Sega Powered is very much a natural successor to the magazine I mentioned earlier, Sega Power. We, as Paul will echo, we cover the past, the present, and the future of Sega. So basically, the more we discovered when we were planning the mag, the more we looked into the market and the way the market was going, the more we realized that there was a lot going on still. It wasn't just going to be a retro mag. So yeah, we do re-reviews of old games. We look at them and we say, right, we haven't played this for a while. How do they play now? We do at least 2 or 3 features an issue. We try to make them, you know, interesting, something a little bit different, something a bit unique. We do a fairly weighty cover feature where we pull apart the subject and go quite deep into that. We even manage a news section. We got columns from Dominic Diamond does a column now. He started in issue 5, so he's doing a monthly column, and he's a very funny writer. We do reviews of new stuff like Daniel stuff or anything else. And we cover the homebrew scene. So the guys that are working on indie stuff, the guys that are making their own versions of whatever, you know, Mark deals with that section. He's brilliant at it. He finds all of it. So we try to make it as rounded a magazine as possible so that if you're into Sega, if Sega in whatever form, there'll be something there for you. That's the idea anyway.
Definitely. And it's, I have to say, one of the most beautiful magazines I've ever seen.
You sent me a PDF earlier.
I've been flipping through here. It's I really want to get my hands on this myself. Yeah. And I love the fact that you mix both the retro stuff, like the re-reviews, as you call them, and the modern games that are released on the platforms, and their hardware reviews and so on and so forth. It's a really nice magazine.
Well, thank you.
Thank you. You're not here to just receive platitude, but I have to completely echo that. And there's a lot of print magazines out around now. We're lucky in some ways that there are so many. Mm. I don't necessarily enjoy all of them, I'll be completely honest. But leafing through the PDF of Sega Power that you sent over earlier, I mean, it is beautiful, you know. There's so many screens in there and different games, and there's barely a page that's wasted. And if this is indicative of the other issues, it really is a stellar looking magazine.
I've got to give props to Kate as well for doing the design, because I know that, you know, God knows how many hours you guys spend on that, Dean. You know, ooh, it's
quite a few.
But even from day one, just for example, with the latest issue with that Dreamcast cover, how many different versions of the cover did we go through, Dean? Have you?
84.
I would say 84. I'm not joking.
Yeah. No, really.
Different shades, backgrounds, and everything. Well, what do you think of this one? It was looking like looking through a Dulux paint chart, honestly. Going, this is a slightly different blue. This is a slightly different orange. What about this with green? What about this with orange? And you just go, I trust you on this. But then you go, but I tell you what, I prefer this one. Yeah, you're right. And then it's like, it's almost like, you know, some sort of fraud protection. He goes, put these in best order.
Oh,
and you go, I hope to God I'm choosing his favorite almost here. And we're all on the same page. And sometimes it's just usually like our first and second choices are in reverse. Yeah. You know, but seriously, all those covers, I was like, my God. But when you see the finished cover, you just go, yeah, it's worth it.
Well, we were very lucky because we got Will Overton, who obviously you guys and your readers will know, yeah, and we got him incredible. To do a cover illustration for us for issue 4. So with that, it was just a case of we opened up the illustration, dropped it on the cover, and that was it. It was done.
Yeah. Mm.
But with this one, we knew what we knew we wanted to do because we looked at Lock-On, which is another magazine we really love. And I love the way they did the kind of flat artwork for the Dreamcast. And we thought, I'd love to do something like that. So Kate made up the illustration. And we had that sorted, but it was just the background. And so we had every single one, it has the same illustration of Dreamcast. It's just working out the background. And we didn't know, we knew we'd eventually get to something we liked, but it's a case of going through a load to get there. Someone says, hey, it's not right. And eventually we put the dots on, which kind of links back to Saturn Power magazine, which is the one we did before. And it was, the colors were just right. I said, yeah, that's it. And you know, but you've got to keep going. I can't send anything out if it's not right. It has to be as perfect as we can make it. It's not perfect, but it has to be as perfect as we can possibly do.
That's it.
So that's exactly the same process that we go through with the cover art of the game releases.
Whose job is that, Daniel? Is that your job as Wave, or does that come from the developer?
I tell you what, it depends on the game. Mm. There's been a couple of games like Intrepid Izzy where the developer is very, very specific about what they want, which helps because it means they already have something in mind and they can pretty much just send over their files and say, yep, print that, we're good.
Yeah.
But then there's been some others like Postal, for example, where their input was basically, yeah, just do whatever you want.
I mean, as long as the game features, we don't get.
Exactly. But no, even then, you know, it pretty much ended up looking like the original 1997 PC release, just cleaned up. Because, that's a whole story in itself. But
yeah, I bet you it is.
We definitely don't have time for that one today.
So look, let's get on to issue 5 and Dean, tell us tell us about the key feature of, or one of the key features of issue 5.
Okay, so the thing that we're shouting about the most with issue 5 is that it comes with a professionally pressed demo CD for the Dreamcast with 4 playable demos and 4 game trailers, all courtesy of the lovely chaps at Wave. So that's kind of it. Yeah. In essence, that's what we're looking at here. And that's been many months of to-ing and fro-ing and thinking, oh God, can we actually do this? Is it ever going to happen? Or are we crazy? And then now we've got it here. It's actually worked and everyone's very happy. And
first disc in over 20 years. Well, first cover disc.
Well, somebody on a
Dreamcast game.
Somebody actually emailed me and they said, you know, I'm not picking holes in your argument, but apparently there was a magazine released in Germany.
Oh, there's always one, isn't there?
It's a Dreamcast magazine or a Sega magazine released in mid 2000s. With a Dreamcast demo, but it was just one
game. It wasn't a demo disc per se. Well, it depends how you define these things, right?
Yeah. Yeah, we're still right.
Yeah. So this is a print magazine. It can be print. I know you can buy a digital version, but you can buy a print magazine which has straps to the front of it, a cover disc.
Yes.
And that cover disc will run in an original Dreamcast.
Yes, it will. Yeah, it's a CD-ROM, so it will run in any Dreamcast and any regions. It's completely region-free. So there's no, there should be absolute no problems. We've tested it on any number of machines, and on every single one, it all works fine. And incidentally, obviously, we've sent out a good number of these now. We've had nobody's got in contact and said, "Oh, it doesn't work on mine." It's everyone seems to be fine.
Yeah, absolutely spectacular. When did you first get the idea of, or when did you get a feeling that it, because I'm sure you always dreamed of putting a cover disc on the front of a magazine, but at what point did you think, we actually could do it?
Daniel would echo this, I'm sure, but it was one of those things when I started, there's a couple of things I really wanted to do, or a few things actually I really wanted to do with Sega Powered. One was put Will Overton on the cover. One was to do a cover CD, and there's another one which hopefully will happen at some point in the future. I wish I could tell you. We'll come on to that. But so I thought it just couldn't happen. It's just never going to happen. It'd be impossible. And then when Daniel announced at the end of last year that Wave were doing their kind of a year of Dreamcast, so they're going to release a certain number of Dreamcast games over 2022. I thought, well, there's a potential that we could do one from that. And that's kind of how it started. And luckily, Daniel wasn't scared off by it. He thought, well, that's a great idea. So that was it, really. Off we went.
Daniel, what was your reaction? Was it, oh my God, geez, you're mad? Or was it, how wonderful?
I very rarely ever tell someone that they're mad for an idea.
It's always a good start.
Yeah, I'm always the guy that says, yep, let's try it. Yeah. You know, the worst that can happen is it doesn't work out.
Yeah.
I was really excited about the idea. It's strangely something I hadn't really even thought of before, but as soon as Dean started talking about it during our casual discussions about the gaming world, I thought, yeah, you know, there's no reason why we can't do it.
Yeah, yeah. And what about you, Paul? For someone who's working on the mag, but also as a long term fan of Games Mags, I mean, when Dean told you of the plan, what was your reaction?
I think it was like one of those again. From we've talked about this before when I've been on RA and been part of RA, but like the cover discs were a big part of the Games magazines.
Yeah,
you know, in a pre-internet. Industry of a majority of it, you know, because even by 2000-2001 the internet was nowhere near what it is now. So I liked that idea because, again, the idea of a cover disc is to show you some of the latest releases, you know, so for us to be able to show off several games, you know, and playable demos as well as rolling demos as well, was just something where it's like, my God, if this comes off. And again, Dean mentioned before having the messenger chats that we have, where it's like, I've just signed up a second demo. Hopefully this one's, going to really, really do well. Then you've got I've signed up a third one. I've got a video for this. My God, this disc is packed. Like, you can't fit anything else on it. You know, it's like, if I can take this out, I might be able to fit that in. And every single bit of that disc is chocker. So again, from myself, who's been like reading mags since like age 10 or 11, you know, and started off with like, you know, Atari ST cover discs. And now in 2022, I've got a magazine through my door with a cover disc on it.
It's incredible.
You know, it's absolutely amazing. It really, really is. You know, it's an over 30-year journey, really.
Paul raises a very interesting point there, which is that, you know, technically in 2022, the concept of the demo disc is very much a thing of the past.
Yeah, absolutely. Which is why it's such a big, which is why we're going to spend this time talking about it.
Yeah. Mm. But the thing is, it may be a thing of the past, but arguably it's one of the only ways that you can experience these games which aren't released online. You know, they're not on the Steam store. They're not on, any of the various marketplaces, Xbox, Switch, etc.
Yeah.
So a demo disc kind of is the only way that you can learn about these titles. Yeah. And I think a lot of people have been really surprised to learn that, that there are still games coming out for the, you know, for the Dreamcast and other retro systems.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I suppose for those who aren't close to the communities like, you know, like we are, I mean, I know that the Dreamcast homebrew scene has been vibrant for many years, hasn't it? But for people who aren't close to it, they may not know that there is such a scene out there.
It's surprising though, because again, I feel like every single month, and Dean touched on this before, but like what Mark finds for the homebrew pages, you know, it's really, really surprises me. I mean, you've got a guy over in Brazil doing an updated version of Final Fight, but coming out for Sega Mega Drive.
Yeah, I've seen that on Indie Retro News, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. So you look at that and you go, this is insane. You know, and we've talked about it with the Amiga, we've talked about other systems. The thing is now, you've got a group of gamers and also programmers who grew up, you know, like late 80s or in the 90s, you know, who used to read these magazines, who used to play these games, and now they've picked up the skills, and now they're actually giving back to the industry that's given them so much back in the day. So, you know, I never thought I'd be writing alongside Dean, you know, someone who used to read, you know, like I remember buying Sega Power, you know, at school and everything. And I always say to him, I still remember the episode with the leather-clad biker on the front, which I always thought was quite strange, you know. And then used to get things like free stickers and stuff on the cover. But then, you know, like you said before, we've got Dominic Diamond in issue 5.
Yeah.
Like, this is Dominic Diamond, who was on Games Master, a massive part of our, you know, childhood. Someone who, you know, I eventually had as a podcast guest and stuff. Yeah. Someone now is your class as a friend, and you're going,
a colleague.
This is, and a colleague as well. And you're just like, this is insane.
Yeah.
But I think, if anything, it shows how hard so many of the community are going, right, well, time to give stuff back and use our skills and knowledge.
Yeah.
You know, like I said, again, I know I keep massaging your ego, Dean, but every day I'm learning stuff, you know, and I like to think that, you know, I do actually listen and act on it.
I can never have too much of that. Carry on, please.
Scratch behind your ears. It's good. It really is. Because again, I think that's just it. I always wanted to write for games magazines. Now I am doing. I know we touched on this last time we recorded, Chris. But then when it comes down to it, I'm learning from people who actually know their onions, as the saying goes, you know.
Yeah.
And again, when you see someone like Daniel, who, again, we've met now in person several times, you know, and, you know, you see what he's got up his sleeve and stuff, and lots of things that he can't discuss. And you just go, this is brilliant. You know, it's exciting to find out things. And then Dean will say in the chat, guess what? Go on. It's like, can't tell you everything yet, but, you know, you go, oh, you know, it's just absolutely amazing. It really is. But anyway, sorry. So I'm with, you know, the disc, because again, like you found out today, you've got people who are still being involved, who've got the PDF of the magazine, because obviously more people are, we'll say, environmentally cautious as well, and space cautious. Mm. So Dean and Dan have sorted that. Sorry, I'll let them two explain that.
I mean, let's go to Dan actually, and just give us a quick rundown of those games that are featured on the disc or as downloads now.
So a very good point. So I think the first game on the disc is Shadow Gangs, which is I can only describe it as a shinobi like action platformer.
Yeah.
Very much a spiritual successor to those games, which were very popular.
It's got a Rolling Thunder look. I mean, I've only seen the stills that it printed in the mag, but it seems to have a Rolling Thunder look to me.
I used to love that game.
Yeah.
I would say yes. There's definitely some influence there. If anyone's played the arcade version of Shinobi, it's probably closest to that.
Yeah.
Which is a little bit different from the Mega Drive Master System versions. After that, we've got Intrepid Izzy.
It's got a look of Shantae.
Yes, that comparison has been made quite a few times, I have to say. We hadn't actually heard of Shantae until that, which is really interesting.
One of my favourites.
Yeah, I mean, I'm obviously very familiar with it now, what with the fact that...
everyone says it.
I think it's the purple hair and that, isn't it?
The sprite definitely has a look.
yeah, for sure. That's, you know, I'm a little bit biased because I'm publishing the game,
yeah.
But it's honestly one of my favorite games that's come out in the last couple of years.
Yeah,
Like, it's really different. Really, really different to kind of what else is out there.
Yeah.
Next up, we've got Flea.
Yes.
Which is pretty well known for before we got involved. I think it was pretty well known for like the NES version.
Yeah.
And I believe it's on the Indie Heroes collection on the Evercade.
That's how I know it. I've played it. I haven't completed it because I almost smashed my Evercade when it got to level 40.
Yeah, it does that.
But it's absolutely brilliant.
Yeah. It really is. It's really, really good fun. It's one of those games that you just keep playing and for hours and hours and hours until you finally get it.
Yeah. One more go, eh?
And then the fourth one is called Driving Strikers.
Yes, this looks interesting.
Which is your typical car football game.
2D Rocket League.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's there's definitely a similarity there. But what makes that particularly interesting is it's slated to be the first ever independently developed and released online capable Dreamcast game.
Amazing.
It's not online playable on the disc, unfortunately.
Yeah.
That was just far too complicated of a situation. But yeah, I'm quite looking forward to seeing what people make of that.
Yeah. And I heard you say in another podcast that you did that there's crossplay as well.
Yes. Yeah. So there's crossplay with, Windows and Linux based, systems. I believe PSP as well, if you can believe that.
What is going on?
Yeah, oh, it's absolutely it's crazy. And just to think, this runs over a modem as well. Like, it's not even, like, it does work with the Dreamcast's Ethernet adapter as well, but it has to work with the modem, right? Because that's what most people have.
That's unbelievable, isn't it? I mean, it's so cool that we can sit here in 2022 talking about an online Dreamcast game with crossplay with the Sony PSP. It's unbelievable.
It does sound like a fever dream.
It is. perhaps more importantly, it opens the floodgates and it says, look, this potential is here.
Yeah.
The engine that the game is based on is available for other developers to use as well. So I think we're going to be starting to see a lot more once that drops.
Yeah. Yeah. And what was the reaction of the developers when you told them that their games were... Because presumably you put forward the games, was it? And then you...
Yeah,
did they react?
Well, basically, we had to ask all of them for permission.
Okay.
Because the contracts that we have are quite specific. And we do that to protect their rights, basically. Say, we're not going to do all this crazy stuff. We're going to do this one specific thing.
Yeah.
So we had to approach them all and ask, you know, would you be interested in a demo going on the disc? If yes, can you put together a demo?
Yeah.
Because we can't put together a demo on their behalf.
Yeah.
And the answer was generally, yes, that would be awesome.
Yeah.
Give me 6 months. And then I had to come back and say, no, you've got 2 months.
I'll give you 6 days.
Yeah.
Absolutely. 6 months would be lovely, but no.
Exactly. So it was hard work for them, and I'm really, really appreciative of the work that they've put in and how quickly they put these demos together. There's a couple of demos that didn't quite meet the mark.
Save them till next time.
Deadline wise, well, one of them is going to be, I'm sure Dean can explain this in more detail, but it's available in the digital version of Sega Powered Issue 5.
Yeah, Dean, tell us about that.
Well, basically, we thought, you know, people obviously choose for various reasons to get the digital version because it's obviously a lot quicker. You can get it straight away. It's a bit cheaper. You don't have to wait to be exported internationally. So there's all number of reasons why they do it. And we thought, well, it looks a bit cruel to have this kind of lovely demo CD for the print one and have nothing at all for the digital one. So As Daniel said, there was a couple of games that we literally couldn't squeeze on the CD, and one of them was Xenocider, which is a cracking game. It's really good fun, and the guys at Retro Sumers, they made this demo for us, and there's quite a bit on it. It's not just one little level. There's quite a lot you can do on it.
Yeah.
So I thought, well, it just seems a shame to not use it. So we've done it so that the demo's uploaded, and once you get the digital mag, you just click on a link in the mag, and it'll take you straight to the page. You download the demo, and then you can either play it through an emulator on a computer, or you can obviously then burn it to a CD-ROM and stick it in your Dreamcast.
Yeah, fabulous. So it was a way of just squeezing it in there, despite being on the CD.
Yeah, and it's just because obviously it's just a bit of added value and making sure that just trying to keep everyone happy, really.
So. Yeah. So don't want to look too much into the future because you're very much focused on the present, as you should be, because you've got this wonderful issue 5 to sell. But having done this now with Daniel, you've got a blueprint for doing it.
Yeah.
Could this be a semi-regular thing?
Well, it's called number one for a really good reason.
I didn't notice that.
I mean, as with everything, it depends on release schedules and you know, availability of demos. It's not like, you know, when it was on the official PlayStation mag, when you had, you know, 20, 30 games every month to choose from.
Yeah.
So we will hopefully do one. We're looking to do another one. But at the moment, we don't know when that'll be or what will be on it. But yes, definitely, definitely. Wow. It was a great experience, and it's gone down so well that, you know, it would be silly not to, really, if you can.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it hits you right in the nostalgia feels, doesn't it? Seeing this plastered to the front. And what else, I'm conscious of time. I know you're pressed. What else can people look forward to in the future from Sega Powered?
Officially, more of the same, really. I mean, that's the thing, really. We've got a couple of things that we're working on to run alongside the mag. We've got a couple of ideas to kind of just expand it slightly in various ways that we hope people will really like. Mm-hmm. Just kind of finding out more and going a bit more into detail about what people want, what people like about the mag, what they don't like, and then kind of just refining it, really. And I think there's always a danger when you do something like this is to kind of get it launched and think, right, that's launched, what's next? And I think, you know, there's still a long way to go with the mag. It's still, you know, the whole process of making it needs to be a bit more stable. We want to be kind of a bit more streamlined with it and have it running a bit smoother. I mean, we do the mag, we get it out regularly. We want it to be every single month now, and that's the kind of plan going forward.
Yeah.
So it's just kind of just polishing it, really, making it as nice as we can. Mark did something recently, which is something we're going to push a bit more, which is the fantasy football. You know, he came to me and said, "What should we do this?" And I was like, "Yeah, go for it." So we've got a fantasy football league now for the new season.
Yeah, brilliant.
And it's things like that, really. But we've got a couple of kind of cool things that will tie into the mag, which I can't really say too much because there's always that danger someone will steal your good ideas, really, isn't there? So better keep the powder dry on that one, I think. I think it's just making it as good as we can and changing it if there's things people want. Improvements that they think people want, and just making sure we get them in.
Yeah, do you get much feedback from readers?
We do, actually. I'm always interested to hear kind of what people don't like about the mag. Because it's lovely. I never get tired of people saying I think it's a great mag.
I'm
genuinely pleased that they do love it. And I'm always very touched by that. But equally, it's quite nice to say something. Yeah, I like it, but. Yeah. I'm not sure about this bit. And you can go, okay, what is it you don't like? What is it that doesn't work for you?
It's a little bit more informative, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. So we're going to do a survey fairly soon, I think. So we're going to kind of just put that out there and get some feedback from people and just find out anonymously what they kind of like, what they don't like. And then obviously if you get enough of one in one way or the other, then you can think, okay, well, that's clearly not working. Because at the end of the day, while you put these things out, us four like it, but you don't really know how all the different features are received by people. There might be some that just don't, they just don't work so much. So it'd be good to kind of speak to them, really.
Yeah.
I think it's a very 90s thing to have as well, the survey, which, again, absolutely love it.
Yeah, you have to stick a stamped address envelope in there when you
and tick boxes like very like sorry like a lot very like God Almighty. This is the type of stuff that Dean has to tidy up when I'm writing down, going very like, and yeah. Somebody's like, Paul, what do you mean by very like? Oh God, quite like love.
Someone whatever. Get Monaghan an editor.
Yeah, I know. There we go.
And Daniel, what about Wave Game Studios? What can we look forward to for the rest of this year into 2023 from you guys?
Well, the rest of this year, more of the same, to be honest. Yeah. We've got lots of games which are in the pipeline at various stages of completion. We're going to be exhibiting a lot of them at, you know, various different events which are going on within the country. Mm. We've got some other plans which are sort of more in the, how shall I say, the education space.
Okay, interesting.
Because we want to try and educate developers that, you know, this is an option that they can develop and release games for older systems, because we're finding that it's not really very well known.
Yeah.
So we're going to embark on something of a, I don't know how to describe it, but an expedition of re-education.
Interesting. Okay.
Just try and spread the word, really, to get it out there. So we've done that. We've dedicated kind of the last year or so to educating consumers that these games are available, and now a lot more people know that they are.
Well, we can certainly help you with that. I mean, I'll confess that before I started reading about Sega Powered in preparation, I had not heard of Wave Game Studios. Had you, Mads?
No, sorry to say.
No.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Because you get to a point where you think everybody knows who you are, and then you realise that really nobody does.
Yeah.
So you know, the job's never done.
But when we see you at events, Daniel, you're always so polite, and you never just go, look at this now. You go, hello. It's like a very polite door-to-door salesman, where it's like, oh, can I interest you in, showing what I'm working on and things. And that's how we got talking. It's absolutely brilliant. And obviously now I've seen you at more games events.
We'd love to have you back on, Daniel, to, preview, maybe something towards the end of this year where you can do a 2023 preview and preview some of the games that you know are in the pipeline. We'd be delighted to give you the platform.
A retrospective of what we've put out and
what
the public opinion is on those games, because you never really know how things are going to be received until it's out there in the public.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, Matt, I was just thinking that we ought to link up Daniel with the guys from New Game Old Flame as well.
Yeah, sure. That'd be a good idea.
That's like a book club podcast where they feature only modern games made for old platforms, and it seems to be going down really well.
Oh, well, that's perfect for us.
Yeah, yeah. Well, okay, well, we can take that offline. Dean, I know we've got 5 minutes, so tell everyone, where can people buy Sega Powered, and where can they find more information about it?
The only place you can buy it really is through our website, www.segapowered.com. At the moment, we've got some issues have sold out. So we're looking
issue
at
issue three is those. Sold out, and issue one,
issue four at the moment is sold out, and then issue one, I think, is because the issue four was the Will Overton one, and that just flew out the door, as you can imagine. So you can buy it there. Obviously, you've got print digital form, so you can get the digital one immediately, or you can get the print one out in the post to you. And we're on Twitter a lot. We're on Discord. There's usually at least one of us on Discord. So if you've got any immediate questions you want answered, then that's the best way. And again, Twitter, we're usually floating around that. We've got a pretty healthy Twitter account, so that's always good. For news and latest information, that's always a good place to drop in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
But, yeah.
And Paul, anything that you want, other than Sega Powered, of course, do you want to mention your other endeavours? You need to be careful in front of the boss?
No, he knows. He knows what I do.
He knows your moonlighting.
No, I know. God. Well, obviously, as we said before, I've struggled time for Maximum Power-Up, so that's still on the never-ending hiatus.
Your episode that you did, actually, with Dean from last year, Is the link is down? Did you do an episode?
Yeah,
on
yeah. It's just at the moment. It might come back soon, but yeah. So yeah, we had a chat last year just before the Kickstarter went live at the time. But now I've been busy with Sega Powered, also writing a bit for Amiga Addict, and I'm about to start on a new a fun feature for that, which is Sega related games on Amiga. So they're not exactly going to be the best versions, as Mads can probably you know, testify. You know, when you're playing things like what is it? You've got things like, you know, Golden Axe, Afterburner and things on on there. And then obviously Pixel Addict, which I've been editor of now for the last two issues, and issue 5 went to print today. So I've just started a couple of new ideas on that to try and change around a few little bits, and yeah, that's got quite a lot of we'll say, I use this term loosely, geek culture in it. So there's a bit of Star Wars chat with an interview with a guy who works for Dolby, who has worked on a lot of films. And anyway, but this isn't the place right now, but yeah, just busy, you know. Yeah. But loving it. Yeah,
And Daniel, where can people find these games if they're bowled over by these demos? How can we buy them?
Primary place would be our website, which is wavegamestudios.com.
Yeah.
We do also try our absolute hardest to make sure that it's available in independent retro game shops.
Oh, cool.
So it's available in 50-something shops within the UK, and then a few hundred within the US.
Yeah.
So there is a list on our website of the UK ones. That's just at the bottom of our website. It just says shop local, I think. And then the US is all handled by a US distributor called VGNY Soft.
Okay.
Great. So yeah, I would definitely say, if you're near to one of the local places, definitely go and support them, because
yeah, for sure.
They need the help, really.
And there's a handy index of some of those places that are listed in Sega Powered itself.
Yes.
The back, which is brilliant.
Yeah.
An index of independent retro game shops.
That's we want to show off what's out there.
Yeah.
Because, obviously, there's a lot more. And I think Daniel was the one who sent me the list initially, and he said, look, you won't realise how many there are out there.
Yeah, I'm amazed.
It is quite a lot, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, there's about 120 that I've personally visited in the last year. So, you know, I know there's quite a few still. People believe that they're not there, but they are.
Yeah, well, our listeners should check it out, and if they know of any others, to let the guys at Sega Powered know, and they can add them to the shopping list, as it's called.
That would be really helpful, to be honest, because they can be hard to find sometimes.
Yeah, I bet you.
Mm.
Yeah. Yes. Well, look, gentlemen. It's Mads. I know I've hogged these three unfortunate souls.
Is Mads still here?
Oh, I'm still sorry. Here, but he told me just off the last interview we did for hogging it.
Yeah. I'm far too polite, so I just don't interrupt him when he's going on like that. So let's just leave it at that. I had some technical questions actually, but we are out of time, so let's leave them for another good time.
It's an excuse to get these good gentlemen back onto the pod.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah, guys, sure. It's been really good fun. Thank you so much for sparing the time. And the very best of luck, both with Sega Powered and Wave Game Studios.
Oh, thank you for having us.
Thank you
very much.
I loved it.
So thanks to Dean, Paul, and Daniel for that, telling us about Sega Powered. Mate, what a magazine, eh?
I was actually blown away.
Yeah, me too. We were just talking about this offline a minute ago, but it's got such a professional look for. I mean, we're used to games on retro gaming, catering to the retro scene, being full of great content,
yeah.
But maybe having more of an how can I put this without being hobbyist. Too harsh? Yeah, hobbyist look to them. But this is, I mean, this just looks the part, doesn't it? It's a brilliantly laid out design for everything. And they actually proofread every single sentence multiple times. So it looks really professional. It's, I'm actually quite hyped for this. So I need to, I hadn't read any Sega Power before we did this, but I will in the future.
Yeah, if you didn't read the content, you didn't look too closely at it, and you just looked at the layout and the way it looks, you would think you were looking at a magazine from the mid to late 90s.
Yes.
Because it's got that, you know, I don't mean this in a negative, I mean in a positive way, almost like that garish kind of look, you know, that CVG had in, you know, in that kind of mid-90s run that they had when Paul Davies was the editor.
Yeah.
You know, it's got that kind of look to it. It looks, like you know, you go into these things and you expect it to look a certain way.
Yeah.
I love the fact that so many of them exist, but you have come to expect a certain, maybe a certain tone or a certain look. But when you're leafing through this, I mean, it just pops, doesn't it? I mean, we've both been looking at a PDF today and it pops off the screen. It is, fabulous. Yeah,
does indeed. It does indeed.
Yeah.
And Dean has some impressive credentials there. So yeah. I'm sure he'll keep the quality high.
Yeah, and Daniel with the publishing studio that we sadly didn't know all that much about, but certainly, you know, along with Bitmapsoft doing fabulous work in bringing us new titles for those beloved old systems.
Yeah.
Great stuff. Yeah, really, really appreciate the guys coming on and talking to us. I know they're trying to get round, you know, talk to others to advertise what they're doing, but we were grateful for them coming on and sparing an hour or so to talk to us.
Indeed.
So this game club of ours that we need to get back on the road, don't we?
Yes, we do. And the next couple of months are Chris's favorite month because we always have a summer RPG, don't we, Chris?
Yeah.
And this year is no different. So it'll be August and September, we will be playing one RPG. Yeah. This time we promised ourselves that it wouldn't be a JRPG. I told you, sorry.
You told me it couldn't be a JRPG.
So this time I promised myself it wouldn't be a JRPG that Chris picked for us. So
Did you ever finish Xenogears?
I don't think so, mate.
Did you not?
Did I forget.
How many hours did you spend on Xenogears to never finish it?
I forget whether I actually finished it right now. I played it for many, many, many hours. So
many,
maybe I did.
Many hours.
Yeah.
And then you just stopped.
I think I never finished it. Yeah.
That's another 45 hours of your life you'll never get back.
True, but I enjoyed those.
You have a lot to thank me for.
I will never thank you for Devil May Cry, mate. But yes, that and Team Radio, yeah. That's going on your bad list.
That's another great game that you didn't get far enough in.
So listening to the latest Retro Game Squad where they played Team Radiator on the PlayStation 2, I was very, very disappointed that they didn't mention the radiators at all.
Is that in their latest episode, is it?
Yes, it is.
Did they like it? Of course they did.
They did, actually.
Yeah, of course they did.
Yeah. I think they were just being nice to John, really.
But, they know good games when they see them. That lot.
Clearly they don't. I mean, I used to trust those guys and their judgment, but after that episode and that treatment of Theme Hospital, I'm not sure anymore. I'm not sure.
I love a bit of Theme Hospital.
Yeah, I'm sure you do.
Yeah.
But let's move on to some games that hopefully are a lot better than both Devil May Cry and Theme Hospital. So
it's
we've
not
got
nice.
Some. This is a shortlist episode, so we each get to choose three games, and we decided this time we'll whittle the list down to just two candidates.
Yeah.
So you beautiful listeners will have two games to vote on. And let's see what they will be. Chris, give us your first game.
Okay. I'm going to start with one which I think is a reasonably deep cut, but maybe isn't. I don't hear many people talking about this game. I'm playing by the rules. It is a Western RPG that was developed by Iron Storm. Mm. Those of John Romero fame.
Yes.
It was the studio he founded after he left id.
Yes.
And they famously or infamously made Dakitana.
Dakitana, yes.
Which was probably not the greatest game ever to be made. But this game I'm going to talk about is a game called Anachronox. And this is not a game which Romero was involved in. It's actually headed up by a guy called Tom Hall, who did work on Dakitana, and he was an id alumni who followed Romero to Iron Storm. It's actually a JRPG.
Come on, mate.
Well, if you classify RPGs by the mechanics, then it is a Japanese RPG because it has active time based battles. But it looks like a late 90s PC game.
Yes.
And when we were talking about this, I was convinced it was published in 1997 or 1998, but you quite rightly pointed out that it wasn't a 2001 game.
Yes.
But it looks like about a 1997 game. It doesn't look great. It's got those horrible early 3D polygons, and it's a little bit brown. But I've always been really drawn to this game because it's meant to be really funny. I don't know whether it had a professional writer. It certainly had somebody, which was, you know, still relatively unique in 2001. It had someone who was brought in just to work on the story. And it's meant to be a really decent story, which isn't just about a group of people who start off in a small village and end up having to go and save the world. It does have a little bit of saving the world in, but it's actually got a lot more nuance to the story. I've been reading some contemporary reviews over the past few days, and I remembered all the reasons why I wanted to play it. And it is a comedy. The story is a comedy. It's meant to actually be quite funny. And if you layer on then some JRPG mechanics, which I really, really like, with some really good characters, and some really, although they might not look great, it's got some really nice environments. It's just always a game in that post Final Fantasy VII RPG binge I went on. I always wanted to play and never did. And you can pick it up now on the likes of Steam and GOG for next to nothing, pennies, basically. It's a game that is so cheap now to pick up. Plus, it's a very manageable size. I mean, how long to beat? Good old How Long to Beat has it at about 22 hours.
So that means it's about 88 hours.
About 80 hours.
Yes.
But okay. One of the reviews I was reading earlier, they said it's about 30 hours worth of game. It actually criticized it for not being long enough for an RPG. But I thought, yeah, well, you know, maybe less is more with this stuff. Yeah, I'm just reading as well here that there was a sequel plan that never happened. Iron Storm went to the wall, didn't it, in the end?
Yeah.
But and there's been plans since to maybe get them back together to create an Anachronox 2, but it's never happened. But okay. I you know, this is the classic line here, and you're going to really trust me. I think you'll like it.
Yes. And I, of course I trust you, Chris. Of course I trust you.
I do. As Paul
when you
Daniels,
say that, I know I'm going to hate it.
So. As Paul Daniels once said, you won't have a clue who Paul Daniels is, but as Paul Daniels once said, not a lot, but you'll like it. There you go.
Okay. So, looks interesting. I had a look myself, and yeah, I could see myself playing that.
Yeah.
But, now let's go for an actual retro game. So my first entry here in this list is an entry I've tried to push your way a couple of times before. I'm going to try just once more. Lands of Lore. The very first Lands of Lore, the one that's, I think it's subtitled The Throne of Chaos. It's from 1993. You remember the 90s, mate?
Barely, but yeah.
It's developed by Westwood Studios, published by Virgin, and it's a classic dungeon crawler, isn't it? It's a follow-up or spiritual successor, at least, to the Eye of the Beholder series. And it's one of those games that I haven't picked up since back in the day, and I remember playing it back in the day, really wanted to get through it, but it was too hard for me. So I'd love to get a chance to play through Lands of Lore at some point. And for me, that stands as a really classical Western RPG.
Yeah. Mate.
But I know you just played Dungeon Master, so I'm thinking maybe you don't want this.
This is a really difficult sell for me, this. And I'm not going to make up my mind until I've heard your other games. But I remember when we were playing Dungeon Master, Dave Velociraptor.
Yeah.
Patron and good Discord member of ours. I remember him saying that Lands of Lore starts off as a better game than Dungeon Master, but by the middle third of it, just ends up such a long old grindy trudge.
Okay.
Anyone who's listened to the Dungeon Master episode knows that I struggled with, I really struggled with the combat in Dungeon Master. And from what I understand about Lands of Lore, although there is more story to it, the combat is really heavy. I don't know, mate.
Let's save that for later on. Of course, you love Lands of Lore.
Okay, so
Move on to your second game. Come on.
Okay. We don't judge Lands of Lore yet.
I'm not hopeful.
I think you might have to push it again. So my second game is it a retro game? What's a retro game? I hate that conversation. I'm not going to have it with you. Dean Swain is going to kill me for this, because this is knocking on the door of PS3. It's not a PS3 game. Don't worry. We're not going there. We've just lost about half of our patrons by mentioning the PS3. No, it's Fable.
Yeah.
The Lionhead Studios game, which I was amazed was 2004. I just assumed it was earlier than that.
So Fable was for the original Xbox, right?
Yeah, it's an Xbox game, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, so for me, actually, just side note, Fable, when I hear just the title Fable, I think of circa 1995, 1996 point-and-click adventure game that was called Fable.
Okay.
I really love that, actually. I haven't got the box, but I still have the original game that I bought back in the day.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, Fable's a very famous game, but it's not... Have you ever played it?
No, never.
No. No, I mean, it's one of those, you know, those kind of console RPGs, you know, the Morrowind and that kind of thing, and a British-produced game.
Yeah.
Open world, third person, you know, you go from town to town picking up quests, largely ignoring... Molyneux
said it was an experience like no other, so how can I not choose this?
Who said that?
Molyneux himself.
Well, Molyneux wouldn't he? Molyneux probably said that it'll take you to Mars if you play for long enough.
Yes.
The man of the broken promise.
Mm.
From what I read of it, I've read some retrospectives. Apparently, it still holds up as a decent game. And it did get a remaster on one of the anniversaries of it. They had a remaster not so long ago, which I believe is a really nice way to play. I mean, the original gameplay is still intact, but it looks a bit nicer and sounds a bit nicer and will run on modern hardware. So that was what I was thinking, you know, might be nice for us with our Steam Deck.
What's the setting, mate? Are we sci-fi or a fantasy fair?
No, it's fantasy. So I'll read you just a very quick section from Wikipedia. Fable series takes place in the fictional nation of Albion, a state that at the time of the first game is composed of numerous autonomous city-states with vast areas of countryside and wilderness between. Setting originally resembles medieval Britain with some European elements. A fantasy game, reasonably typical kind of fare of you have to go and save the world. Obviously, it spawned sequels. There was a Fable 2, there was a Fable 3. You know, it's one of those games that you can play probably blaze through the story in reasonably quick time, or you can plow in 100 hours or so if you wanted to, which I actually thought suited this format really well, because if for those who've got the time can take their time and go and do all the side stuff, and if you want to just blast through it, then you can. And actually, it's got a score from Danny Elfman.
Yeah, I saw that.
Who did the music for Batman. So
yeah.
With part of these games, part of the attraction is the visuals and is the music. So if you want a reason to pick Fable, maybe that's a good enough reason on its own. It's a very famous game. It sold really well. It spawned multiple sequels. It's a game that I imagine many of our listeners have actually played, or those who are of the RPG persuasion have played. It's just never one that I've got to.
Yeah, it's a title I've heard mentioned a lot of times before, and friends have loved the game back in the day, but I've never even seen it run myself, so I know very little of it. But it looks interesting, definitely.
Yeah, Yeah.
And I was just thinking, 2004, yeah, that is not really a retro game, but...
No, just don't tell Dean.
What is a retro game? I mean, 10 years ago, Retro Asylum started. 10 years ago, would you have considered the 1994 game a retro game?
Of course.
Of course I would. So we have to consider 2004 game retro as well now.
Yeah, I mean, I hate the whole thing. What is retro is different to every single one of us.
Yes, exactly.
What we just must not do is tell Dean, because he'll kill me.
No worries. I won't tell him. Not before I tell him to make a cover for this episode.
Yeah, well, if Fable goes through, we'll just say, it's just some obscure 1983 game, Dean. It's all right.
Sure. So on to my next game, which is also quite a new one, actually. So it's not quite as new as yours, but we're almost there. Neverwinter Nights. And I'm not talking the original, actual retro Neverwinter Nights, which was from 1991 or something along those lines.
I had no idea that was a thing.
Oh, yes. We talked about this offline as well. Don Daclo did the first Neverwinter Nights that was played online on AOL for many years.
Amazing.
Yeah. But Neverwinter Nights, most of us who like our RPGs probably think of the 2002 PC game Neverwinter Nights, which was primarily known for having a Dungeon Master mode. I mean, that's at least me and my friends knew it for.
Yeah.
And I remember buying this back in the day because one of my friends, he wanted to set it up and be the Dungeon Master for us, and he had all these grand plans. So I bought it. I thought I'll probably play it single player later on as well. I think I fired it up and played it for 10 minutes, and then I've never come back to it. So I have the original, I would like to say, 4 CDs lying around here somewhere. And I've never played it, but I've heard so many people just love this game.
Yeah. They
talked so much about how innovative it was in its time, how many new things it brought to the genre. So this is one of those games I need to experience at some point. And knowing myself, I know I won't play any RPGs apart from when we actually play them either playthrough or for this game club, because I don't have that kind of time for gaming anymore. So
is it one of those open world RPGs or is it linear?
As I understand it, it's a linear campaign.
Okay.
And it's a set. If you look at Wikipedia, they say it's around 60 hours. So it's a huge campaign.
Yeah, that is a big main campaign.
Yes, definitely. So, a classic Western RPG in the early 2000s setting, at least.
Yeah.
Or maybe it was the RPG that kind of set the scene and the stage for how an RPG was supposed to look in the early 2000s.
And what's the what platforms is it on, Mads? Is it been ported? Can you play? I mean, for those who, because obviously all these people going on holiday, can you play? Did it get a Switch release or anything?
Yes, it's got a Switch release. That's what I was thinking. People would probably be playing it on, but today you can play it on Windows, of course, and I think it's fairly cheap to pick up as well. It's available for Linux, Mac, Switch, PlayStation 4, and Xbox One as well.
Yeah.
So there should be plenty of options for playing this.
Okay. Cool. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that sounds good. Yeah. It's certainly one. I've got it as well. It feels like a game that a lot of people have got, but maybe never played.
Yeah.
I had it because it was one. It's the first game I actually remember getting in there. You know those old, those DVD style cases for PC games after they went from the big box?
Yeah.
I've got it in one of those. And I remember, I think it was the first game I bought in one of those cases.
Okay. I'm pretty sure I had a big box version of it. But
I'm sure there is one.
Yeah.
I'm sure
there is. But as you know, all my PC big boxes, they were thrown away at some point, so.
Yeah, I also see it loads in charity shops as well, actually.
Okay.
It's a game that always comes up.
Mm.
Yeah, it must have sold well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good. That's my second game then. So what's yours?
Right, third and final. Now, at this point, John V is screaming at his car radio or wherever he's listening to this because he's saying, they've been promising me Planescape Torment for years and I've never had it and I really want to play Planescape.
But if John wants it, then I think we should just skip it because I'm a bit angry with John at the moment because he just posted the other day that he finished Devil May Cry.
He did.
I still haven't finished myself, so
yeah.
I'm probably not going to finish it. So I lost to John again.
He even patted you on the head and said that maybe you ought to try easy mode.
He did. He could have just as well just called me a pansy. But oh, well.
John V presses the bruise again. John, we hear you. On Retro Asylum, we're listening to our listeners' feedback. My third game is Planescape Torment. What is Planescape Torment? I hear you ask. Well, it's a very famous game, and it is part of the Black Isle gamography, the famous Black Isle Studios who made Baldur's Gate and Icewind Dale and those classics published by Interplay. This is a retro game from the 90s, got to be, hasn't it, Mads? This is my only game earlier than year 2000, just released into 1999. This is a game that I've always wanted to play, and this is the game, Mads, which we played Disco Elysium for playthrough last year. This is the game that inspired Disco Elysium. It's an Amnesiac protagonist.
Let's hope these guys actually know how to work within a genre setting. I mean,
it's not a detective game.
No. But as long as they stick with the rules and try to do some coherent storytelling, I'll be all fine.
I love Disco Elysium. Mads doesn't. But this is the game. And the big carry through to Disco Elysium from Planescape Torment was the ability to resolve situations in a non-violent way.
Yes, this is, from what I understand, I've never played it myself, but it's very much a story-driven game. It's not about the levels and the combat. Well, some of it is, of course, but it's mainly about discovering who you are, really, isn't it?
That's right. And I think you can, that's right. So I think you play a character called the Nameless One, who's on a journey to find out who he is. I think you can play it in a combat-heavy way, certainly not combat-y like Baldur's Gate, because it's a narrative-driven RPG. But the beauty and why this game won so many plaudits and continues to get so many plaudits in retrospectives is that you have a lot of choice in the way you resolve situations and the way you resolve quests, because if you choose to, you can pretty much go through the whole game without undertaking any combat at all. And that is what they carried through into Disco Elysium. They took it one step further and started to introduce that failure as part of the game. But this is very much the inspiration for that. I was going to say the narrative is very strong. It was designed by a guy called Chris Avellone, who's very famous for some of the games he did pretty much after this one. He was the lead writer on Fallout New Vegas, which is one of the games which people say maybe had one of the best plots of any game. And he's now, you know, the likes of Pillars of Eternity and Divinity Original Sin 2. So he's got a lot of credits for really strong narrative RPGs and narrative adventure games. So it's got a really good pedigree. And, you know, we both love a story. We both love narrative-driven games. Combine that with some really solid D&D RPG mechanics. I don't know. Maybe this sounds like my perfect Western RPG.
Yeah, this does intrigue me, definitely. And I was just about to say, this is also available for the Switch, by the way, if people want to play it handheld.
Yeah.
And for iOS, it seems.
Yeah. And from what I've read about the Switch port is that they handled it really well and they made some modifications to the font size and whatnot.
It's the enhanced version. There's an enhanced version made by Beamdock in 2017, I think. And that's the one that you can get for iOS and Switch and PlayStation and so on.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. And again, it's on GOG. It's dead cheap.
Yeah.
It's just really, really cheap. And so it's readily available. Hopefully it'll be one that we can get going on the Steam Deck.
Yes.
It's available on PS4 and Xbox One as well. So there's pretty much no excuse not to play it.
Nope.
And as much as I'd like to wind up John V and say, oh, it's rubbish, don't bother, this is one which feels like, you know, a gaping hole in perhaps both of our games we've played.
Yeah. And speaking of gaping holes, I have never played Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic.
What?
And I know you really love that game. I know my friend Carl from the video game newsroom Time Machine always rants about how great Knights of the Old Republic is. And lots of my friends played it as well back in the day. So even though it's not that retro, it's a 2003. We've got a lot of modern games here. We won't tell anybody. A lot of modern games here today. But even though it's not that old, this is definitely one of the old RPGs that I'd love to get into at some point.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say that I'm a huge Star Wars fan. I've watched all the movies, so I know a bit about the universe. But I definitely do love some... Actually, what I love most about Star Wars are the games. I mean, we played Jedi Knight. I love Dark Forces. And I would definitely love to dive into the Star Wars universe once more with Knights of the Old Republic. It's a BioWare game from when, as you said, BioWare were at their peak. So... yeah, you tell us about this, mate. Actually, you played this before.
Yeah, it's really great. I'm like you. Yeah, I consider myself. I like Star Wars, but I wouldn't say I was a Star Wars fan. But it's still really cool playing. Yeah, as we know from Knights of the from Jedi Knight and Dark Forces, you know, in playing a game like that in a world that you're semi familiar with does elevate the experience.
Yeah, definitely. I used to love playing X-Wing and TIE Fighter back in the day, for example.
And I think like the patented BioWare morality system really suits the Star Wars universe because of the Jedi and the Sith dichotomy. So that it even plays into that, you know, and you can be the most horrendous Sith Lord in Knights of the Old Republic, which, you know, produces the usual kind of narrative dissonance when your main quest doesn't really...
So do you need to select light side or dark side when you start this, or
no.
Can you kind of like swerve?
You can be right down the middle if you like,
okay.
Or you can be a true paragon,
yeah,
or you can be just a complete and total bastard.
See, I like the idea of that.
Yeah,
and this all of the other games we talked about these past couple of games at least is available for the Switch and iOS as well. So and Android. So there should be lots of possibilities for playing this handheld.
Yeah,
it's of course also available for Xbox and Windows and Mac and so on.
I never finished it. And I said to you when we were chatting about this, that like there's, you know, when I start a game and I really invest in it, I generally finish them. But I can't remember why I didn't finish, whether I got hit a difficulty spike or just bounced off it. But I remember spending dozens of hours playing it. So I have really strong memories of a couple of particular sections, which I could probably walk you through. And again, that's unlike me because I think I played it pretty much when it came out. It's great. You know, we'd have a blast playing this and it'll be really fun to talk about. Because of the wider lore and everything else.
Yeah, and lots of people on our Discord definitely love their Star Wars. So
yeah.
Be right up there early as well.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a good choice.
Okay, so we've got our six choices now. Now we need to whittle down the lists. I'm just going to recap. You've got Fable, the Xbox version, not the old PC point-and-click adventure game.
Nope.
Anachronox, which is a PC RPG. In its original form, and Planescape Torment, which was also PC, I guess.
Yeah.
I've got Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic. Did that start on the Xbox or the PC, actually?
I think it was a simultaneous release.
Okay. And I've got Lands of Lore, the old game, which is definitely a PC release when it came out in 1993. And Neverwinter Nights, the second installment called Neverwinter Nights. That's actually also BioWare, isn't it?
Yeah. Is it?
It is, yeah. Developed by BioWare.
Okay. I didn't know that.
Yeah. So two BioWare games for me. Mate, you get to go first. Eliminate one of mine.
So it probably comes as no surprise.
Star Wars.
Given my comments earlier. Mate, I can't play another dungeon crawler.
So how many times will I have to put this forward, mate? I'm just going to keep doing it.
I'm
going to do a theme at some point that's just called Lands of Lore.
Lands of Lore. We are playing Lands of Lore. Now, look, if we hadn't have played Dungeon Master and I wouldn't have read some of the things I read about Lands of Lore, I was well up for this last year and we've talked about it before. I would have been well up for it because I quite like the story. I love Westworld games and...
Yeah.
It's got a lot going for it in my mind, but pretty negative experience with Dungeon Master overall that, I think it just remind me too much of it.
Fair enough, mate.
Yeah, it's just not the right time. I can't, you know, given the other two that's on your list, I can't, in good conscience, I can't keep it.
Okay, okay. Lands of Lore has to go.
Sorry, mate. One day.
My turn, my turn. So we've got the Western RPG that's actually a JRPG, and we've got the modern Xbox game, and we've got Planescape Torment there. What are we going to go with? Actually, I'm going to start... I think all your three games are games that I'd like to play, actually. Mm. They all look interesting. So I'm just going to... I already know which one I'm going to put forward, so that I can't eliminate that. Anachronic has to go. Pretty much... Because it doesn't look that good, and you say it's got the same game mechanics as a JRPG, which we didn't want to play this time. We wanted to try an actual Western RPG. So not because I wouldn't want to play it at all, but because it's my least favorite of the three.
I had to try and squeeze in a JRPG somehow.
Of course you did. We all know you wanted to add Knights of Centaur, but...
I did not want to add Knights of Centaur. I just said,
no, Chris, no Knights of Centaur here.
No, there's no soft porn games on here. But you played the game called Soft Porn, of course.
Oh, yeah, we did.
So Anachronox then, eh?
Yes. You've got Fable and Planescape Torment in there left.
One day I'll get to play Anachronox.
Hmm.
Okay, so you've got Knights of the Old Republic and Neverwinter Nights.
Yep.
Two BioWare games.
Yes.
This is difficult because Knights of the Old Republic, I as I said, I've played for a long time, didn't finish it, which makes me wonder why, and I can't remember. Was it too difficult in the end? Did it just get dull? I can't remember. Neverwinter Nights I own. I've wanted to play for a long time. There's just something nagging at me about Neverwinter Nights, though. I don't know whether I read a review of the Switch port or something and it wasn't great or...
Okay.
There's just something nagging at me. Again, it's got that look. It's got that early 2000s look. Maybe looks more like a late 90s game. Tend not to have aged brilliantly, games of that era in terms of the RPGs. And again, 60 hours just to complete the main campaign doesn't really, it fills me with dread a little bit. Well, I like long games, but yeah, I mean, thinking if that's just the main campaign, Christ, you know, I like to get through some of the side stuff. I can see me playing that for years. I think, okay, I'm going to eliminate Neverwinter Nights and I'm going to put forward Knights of the Old Republic. I think we'd have a really good time chatting about Knights of the Old Republic, and I think you'd really enjoy. I think you'd like it.
Yeah, well, seeing as I can't have Lands of Lore, I'm definitely happy with Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic.
There we go, then. I'm happy. You're happy.
And let's see if I can make you happy here as well, mate. So, Fable or Planescape Torment? So for me, it's actually an easy choice. So I'm just going to do it swiftly, like ripping off a Band-Aid. I'm eliminating Fable, and that's not because
when you said
I don't
that,
like...
I thought you were going to get rid of Planescape.
No. It's not because I don't like the sound of Fable. It's because Planescape Torment, after reading about it, I would actually prefer that even over my own choice, Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic.
Okay.
That really, really intrigues me. I would love to see. And as you know, I actually did enjoy Disco Elysium.
Yeah.
That's why I hated the fact that I didn't enjoy the last plot twist at the end that kind of destroyed the narrative for me. But I'd love to see where that came from. And I love the idea of a primarily story-driven, non-combat heavy, if you want, RPG. So I'd like to see this. Planescape Torment is, that would be my pick, actually.
I think that's a mighty fine choice. And that definitely would have been my pick out of the three that I chose as well. It's a game that I've just been dying to play, especially after Disco is one of my favorite games of all time.
Hmm.
So seeing where the influence comes from, I think would be fab. But, I think either of those games, I think we're going to have a great, great RPG couple of months.
Yeah, definitely. So Planescape Torment and Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic, both of them available for both iOS and Switch if you want to play it portable while you're on holiday.
Yeah. And I think we've been struggling this year to pick games that both of us like. I think we could have done it this time.
Yes, I think so too.
It could be a return to form.
Mm.
So there we go, mate. Any shout-outs, anything else you want to mention before we sign off?
I'd like to shout out Retro Game Squad. I enjoyed their the recent episode on the PlayStation games. And even though I really, I was quite disappointed that they didn't mention the radiators in Bloody Theme Radiator, I enjoyed what they're outing us as usual. So shout out to those guys.
Yeah, nice. Yeah, for me, I'd shout out to Carl of the Video Game Newsroom Time Machine. I recorded with him for the first time last week. A rare week off from podcasting, so I volunteered my services to help him with his wonderful project over on Video Game Newsroom Time Machine. That was good fun. So, yeah, shout out to Carl. Shout out to Andy and Jim. We're recording Waffle 4.0 tomorrow over on Playthrough, where we announce our next round of games, which will be fun. And big shout out to Dean, Steve, and Matt. We know it's been a while. Dean put out a video on our YouTube feed. Don't worry, we're not going anywhere. We haven't gone anywhere. We've got Dean with a very hot shed and just general life stuff, which has just kept us away from our mics. But don't worry, in the autumn, we'll be back as usual, business as usual, coming up for episode 300.
Yes.
And no drama to see here at all.
And, no. That's so, Chris, what are your choices for a playthrough? Just
I'm not telling you.
Oh, come on.
No, I only have one because I know the game that I've chosen. I know that none of you have played it.
Okay.
So I only need to take one. But this is the first time when we don't know at all what the others have chosen.
Nope.
In fact, I don't even think you guys know what you've chosen yet, do you? We're only 24 hours away.
Oh, I know what I've chosen.
Ooh, Matt's decided,
yes.
Nice.
Yes. But I do have two, just in case I'm sure with my choices, Andy and Jim, they haven't played it, but maybe you have, so I've got two, just to make sure.
If that intrigues your listeners and you don't listen to Playthrough, then look us up on the podcast platform of choice. You'll find it, Playthrough or playthroughpod.com.
Mm-hmm.
Grand. Well, mate, thank you so much for joining me in what was Steve Erickson's episode of the interview with Sega Powered. It was a pleasure to talk to those guys. Pleasure to be back on the mic with you.
Likewise, mate.
See you next time.
See you.
Bye. Take care, mate. See you. Bye.
From now on, unlike your parents were, you are the secret force of Retro Asylum.
Playing so fast, they're the only ones who can take you back in time. They play old games, they're more retro than J1 Optimus Prime. At home or the arcade for adventures.